Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, that was annoying. It was annoying. It happened. I want to move on.
Yeah, I think I care about as much of about that game as they seem to. So they tried to steal it at the end, but yeah, it was just like a whatever game. That was like the trappiest trap game ever after Clippers and Bucks this past weekend. No real surprise.
Yeah, it was funny. I thought this was going to be a trap game, and then they started out the game playing well, and I was like, oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, same, dude. Same. I was just like, hey, check these guys out. And then it was like, no, it was a trap game.
The Lakers wind up losing to the Brooklyn Nets by a score of Nets more, Lakers less. There are a couple points that I want to make coming out of that game. And we're going to make those points, and we're going to move on and answer your guys' questions, because Sunday we talked about the Clippers game, no show yesterday, and we have a ton of questions to get to. So my two points here, and you can decide which one you want to talk about more, which one you find more important or pressing. One, it's shocking to me that Danny Green is only shooting 5 3-pointers a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's trending downward, by the way. Over the last, like, mm-hmm. 10 or 15, he's shooting closer to 4. That I don't like that trend. I don't like that at all. That tells me that the opposing teams are just focused on keeping Danny Green off the line, mm-hmm. which is something that is going to probably hurt them come playoff time. And then the other thing, too, is that Caris LeVert, let's see, what was his line? Caris LeVert hurting the Lakers tonight kind of continues that trend of skilled wings giving them problems. Another thing that might come back to bug the Lakers come the postseason. So between those two things, which feels more pressing? Which do you feel like is worth talking about more?
I think Danny Green, because that's more about us, right? Like,
yeah.
Although the point about LeVert obviously extends beyond just LeVert. Yeah, Danny Green is so dependent upon other guys getting shots for him. I know he's not the greatest, like, off-screen type of shooter, but I would like to see some incorporation of that. But there are just going to be some games, man, where if they decide to take that away, even having him out there as a threat, if they're taking that away, it means there's more space for other guys. Like, one thing that I've liked that Vogel's done recently is he's going smaller earlier and more often mm-hmm. since the All-Star break. And so that's going to mean more AD at the five. AD hit some, you know, he missed the game winner, which was wide open. But he shot the ball really well. If guys are hugged up on Danny Green and we've got AD capable of popping effectively out to the three-point line, it's just a lot of room for LeBron James to operate in. So if they are pressing up on Danny Green and he's only getting a couple of shots,
serving his purpose.
Yeah, he's exactly serving his purpose, even if it's not indicated in the box score.
That's absolutely fair. I still think, though, like, there are some spots where I would rather Danny Green, like, he gets run off the line a little too easily for me, for my liking.
Mm-hmm. Especially at his size, yeah.
Yeah, I would just like to see him let it rip every so often. You know, you kind of see this sometimes with shooters where, like, I think you and I talked about the other night that, like, J.J. Redick, or no, was that you? That might have been
that was not me.
Yeah, we were.
I know we all look alike. All your co-hosts.
You and Adam are basically clones.
We're basically a little Austin Powers mini me.
Yeah, between Adam, Harrison, and you, yeah, that's just like all the same.
We're basically triplets, right? Yeah.
You know what's funny? My grandfather-in-law was a part of triplets, identical triplets.
Identical triplets.
Identical triplets. They all went on the same date one night.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a fun story.
No, there's some possibilities there.
Yeah. So anyway, the reason I say this, though, J.J. Redick, the reason I brought him up was I saw him. He had, like, plenty of time. He caught the ball with, like, 2 seconds at his free throw line. Could have taken 2 dribbles and taking a shot at the end, taking a heave at the end of the quarter, and chose to take that extra like step that meant that he wasn't getting his shot off in time, right? And that just like really bothered me.
Yeah, that's our favorite. Yeah,
it like really it bothers me under most circumstances, but with a shooter as talented as Redick, like that's a potential 3 points. That really annoys me. And I kind of wonder if that's just kind of how all shooters in the NBA are wired, where in the back of their mind, they're thinking this contested three might bring my numbers down shot a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and like Green on the year is still shooting about 37-38% from 3-point range. And, you know, I don't think he wants that to drift too much lower than that, because that starts messing with his money. And, you know, to a certain extent, I can't quite blame him. But I do wonder if he's not taking some of those, if he's so willing to be run off the 3-point line, because to a certain extent, that messes with him a little bit. And I just wish he would just let it rip every so often. I have my tinfoil on, though.
Yeah, I think you're reaching on this. I do think the point is well made about him letting it rip a little more often. I also think Lakers could probably do a little more to get him shots. Because, again, he's a guy who's completely dependent on other people to get him a shot.
Yeah.
So that has to be some, you know, like how many shots Danny Green gets has a lot more to do with other people than Danny Green, you know?
Mm-hmm. I also kind of want to... Like, one thing Toronto did a really, really good job of with Danny Green was that I think it's called a pinch screen or the screen that allows him to be more open from the corner. What screen is that?
A flare screen? So
No.
Explain the plan.
So basically, like, the guy has a ball at the opposite wing. Danny Green is at, like, the above the break 3-point area, and then drifts down and gets a back screen basically that releases him towards the corner, and he winds up being wide open. Caruso is really good at setting the screen. I think it's a pinch.
So pin screens are like when he's on the weak side.
Yeah.
And somebody comes in, like the wing guy will usually drop in and pin the guy into the paint.
Right.
And then it's a skip pass. Is this a skip pass?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, we're talking about the same screen here.
Right.
I would like to see the Lakers release him more on that kind of a play. I don't see them do that often enough, something like that, especially given how well LeBron is handling the ball lately. So I would like to see that play a little bit more to get him a little bit more open. And if they switch that screen, if it's like Caruso setting it, he's actually pretty capable, not really around the rim, but he's capable in that kind of closed proximity to be able to take advantage of the switch if that's what it comes to. So just small things like you're saying, if Green isn't getting his shots off, it's because it's something that's going on around him. And I would like to see the Lakers do more to get him going. Just get him more looks, because 5 is already low and then it's trending downward over these last 15 games, getting ready for the postseason. That really concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm fairly happy with where the Lakers are, and with, like, the thing about Danny Green is that him getting like $15 million to be one of the role players maybe rubs me a little like the wrong way.
I got that a lot in my mentions. You get it in your mention, I'm sure, too, but I got that a lot tonight.
Yeah. Like, if he was like, cause he is kind of just one of the other role players, and he's good at his job. He's not like 15 million good at his job, I don't think.
Right.
And now maybe I'm underestimating the beyond the box score stuff that he does, but I watch the tape too. And like, he's good. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. I just probably a little overpaid. That said, he's a necessary guy on this roster. And there's probably going to be no real harm done. We also remember how things went down. We had to kind of have a guy in our back pocket in case Kawhi didn't sign, and that's going to cost you, right? So Danny Green probably got a couple million more per year as a result of, at least from us, as a result of us asking him to wait. So, I don't love that, but at the end of the day, not a ton of harm done.
Yeah, I think they kind of, you know, there was a couple extra million for him, waiting around, and then there was probably another million or so for like his podcast presence on Spectrum. So you never know how these things work. Let's take a quick second here. And like I said, Brooklyn beat the Lakers by 104, by a final of 104 to 102. It was a trap game that we thought it was going to be. It started out like it might not be, and then it wound up being one. I don't really want to spend much more time on this. We have a ton of questions to get to, and that's what we're going to do. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the life's ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There is, however, an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is a really unique app, and it works on your phone, tablet, web browser, whatever. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading all kinds of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with this audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, lunch break, or whenever. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now. It has a massive and growing library from self-help to business to health to history books. Whatever you're looking for, they got it. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. I like Blinkist because in less than 15 minutes, I feel like I can fast track my path to a more intelligent or informed or healthy me. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And also, you'll save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. So I was asked to recap that game because I'm doing recaps for Silver Screen and Roll now. Mm-hmm. And now I realize why I don't do much recapping.
how'd that go for you?
I mean, it was nice that I had a guest, and Alex is really good. I was technically his guest, so it's easier to do that from a guest standpoint. You don't really have to, like, the subjects are found for you.
You talking Regla?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yep. Padilla.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I do it with Regla, I host, and he's really good, so he makes my job easy there. But yeah, tonight's game was, or last night's game, by the time you guys are listening, wasn't exactly the thing that I really wanted to spend a bunch of time on. Sorry, Silver Screen. So we'll go to these questions, though. First question here comes from LA240825. Hey, guys, love the show, and I was thinking that since the Lakers retire Hall of Famers' jerseys, that if Dwight Howard would ever have his jersey retired by the Lakers, what would it take for that happen? For that to happen, in your opinion? Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
So I do think Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer. I know there's been some degree of disagreement about that, but he was the best center in basketball for half a decade, four-time Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, anybody who wins multiple Defensive Player of the Years generally get in.
Generally, Ben Wallace is not in, but by and large, and it's not like Dwight was a very good offensive player too, right? And great rebounder, and and there's an argument to be made that Ben Wallace deserved. I mean, maybe he didn't do it long enough. Anyway, that's a different question.
Yeah. I'd probably put him in. Won a championship too.
I think that, you know, because he wasn't a scorer, I think that I think that's too heavily weighted because he was great as a rebounder and a defensive player. Maybe he didn't have the longevity. I think that's a decent argument. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, with Dwight, I think Dwight's a Hall of Famer, but he did not do Hall of Fame things with the Lakers, right? That first year and only year he was with us in his prime. And now he's just not that type of player. He's a role player, a bench guy. So I just don't see anything really being able to happen for the Lakers to retire his number. Now, a listener is correct that the Lakers only retire Hall of Fame type guys. But I think that you have to have played, like, we're not retiring Karl Malone's jersey or like Gary Payton or different guys, right, that are Hall of Famers, but they didn't do the Hall of Fame things for us. You got to do the Hall of Fame things for us to get your number up in Staples.
I came real close to almost vomiting in my mouth.
Well, Malone jersey up
Karl
there.
Karl Malone being up there would really piss me off.
Yeah.
All right, next question here. And I agree with you. I don't think, you know, everything you said I agree with. Next question here comes from M. Griffith M. Hey, fellas. So a lot of Laker fandom loves to make the comparison of Anthony Davis and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. What do you all think of that comparison, and what do you think of AD having Kareem around the organization to help develop certain skills? Could this help Davis go from all-around great to all-time great, or has he already cemented that?
So I see the comparison. I see some similarities and I see some differences in that comparison. Kareem nor AD were the most physical big men, and they were more skilled and athletic. Also, at my age, I was born in 1980. My memories of Kareem are old Kareem, and I you know, I've watched the tape and whatnot of it.
Oh, I thought Kareem you were around for Bucks Kareem.
I was not quite that old. So my chick used to always say, you know, swing left, shoot right on his skyhook. He would shoot a skyhook like 80% of the time when he'd have the ball. And that is where I see the difference, right? Like, they're similar in that they're skilled, not terribly physical, but athletic, especially for their respective eras. But Kareem was a guy that you would throw the ball into and he would pretty much score. Like, you could not stop the skyhook. He would miss the skyhook, but he was a reliable throw him the ball in a very different style of NBA. Whereas AD, like, he can post up and he's actually getting better. Like, he's been better the last 15, 20 games at this than before that, but that's not really how he makes his money and like his go-to. And AD is a significantly better defensive player at this point that's of his career than Kareem was with the Lakers, at least during my conscious days, right? But this is Kareem retired when he was like 42 years old as a big man with the Lakers after the 1989 season. So me remembering Kareem as not a great defender is me saying, yeah, this 35-year-old big was not a great, you know what I mean? Like, he was a better defender in his prime. But that said, I think that AD, relative to his era, was still a good deal better defender, while Kareem was a more reliable, give him the ball and he's going to score for you kind of guy.
It's completely different eras.
You know? Yeah, it's so hard to compare, man, because the game is so different. It's barely the same sport.
Yeah, there's almost nobody. I would like to – a fun stat to have would be percentage of Kareem's touches coming from post, like post ISOs, compared to like the highest – like you could probably combine the two highest post ISO players in today's league, and they might not be higher than Kareem's.
Sure.
And it's just so different. Now, whether Kareem could help AD – I mean – I don't really think he can, honestly. Like, you would be hoping that Kareem helps. And I don't know if the listener who wrote this question meant it this way, like all around great to all time great. But the way that you would hope Kareem might help AD is in like the mentality. Kareem was perfectly okay with, like you said, shooting 10 skyhooks a game. He never got bored with that move. And I think sometimes AD literally gets bored by dominating a player the same way over and over and over again. So like if Kareem kind of imparts some of that wisdom to him, that might help. But overall, like they played such different games offensively that I don't really know if Kareem could help.
Yeah, and AD didn't have a go-to move like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I actually think that the guy who can help AD get to all-time great type level is the guy he's working with, which is LeBron, right? Like it's like mentality type stuff, and it's being able to help create for him. But LeBron spends a lot of time, like, he in the third quarter, especially of this Nets game, he was kind of overpassing to AD. I've seen multiple times this year where LeBron's trying to get AD going because he knows how important he is. And I think that there's that, like, there's that dynamic between them where they're very fond of each other and AD looks up to him. And so I think that AD is in just exactly the right place to thrive. I just don't think it's from a guy like Kareem, especially Kareem's age. He's battling leukemia and all that. That's not just not in the cards.
Yeah. Let's go one more question here. Actually, you know what? Let's take a quick second. When we come back, we'll answer more of them. All right, so the next question here comes from Money Mike H. What's up, man? So apparently brother was a little tough for you and Pete to say since y'all are used to SoCal slang, so I'll say what's up, man. Catch any gnarly waves lately?
What's up, brother?
Anyway, what's been your favorite college March Madness games you've ever seen in your lifetime?
Oh, Kentucky versus Duke, 1992, Christian Laettner turnaround fadeaway. That whole game was freaking nuts. Jamal Mashburn, Bobby Hurley. This is also back in an era where guys didn't really declare for the draft until after their junior year, at least. Mm-hmm. So think of how much talent like Duke would have right now, or Kentucky, if guys weren't just one and dones, right? So you have all these future NBA players, and it was this Final Four game. It was the semifinals, and this game was just nuts. And it was like one of those games where it was like one haymaker and then the other team would come down and hit a crazy shot. And you're just like, ah, right. And then Duke is down. It's either tied or they're down one. I think they're down one. And you know how we run that play where it's at the end of quarters and LeBron will throw this like 70-foot baseball pass and AD catches it at the free throw line, usually to kick it out to KCP or a 3-point shooter. But it was the same type of play. It was Grant Hill inbounding the ball, and Christian Laettner posted up Jamal Mashburn or one of them Kentucky dudes, and he like hit him with a shoulder fake, fade away, bucket. He was like 11 for 11 in that game, in like in the semifinals of the Final Four, like fade away, buzzer beater. Just, it was like one of those perfect games. And I'm not the biggest Duke guy and certainly not the biggest Christian Laettner guy, but that game right there, all-time classic. How about you?
My one problem with that game is that it had Duke fans being happy.
Duke winning. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I totally get you there. Purely from a basketball perspective, I loved that game.
Yeah. I'm not really big on college basketball, but I do recall this one. I remember I had just started dating Jen. Like, just started. To the point where I was still kissing up to her parents. And
okay.
Roger is from Illinois, so he was like a fan of the Fighting Illini. And there was a national championship game between North Carolina and Illinois that I watched. I didn't watch it with them because I wasn't, you know, like I said, just started dating Jen. And it was so early on in the relationship that I didn't even see him like his in-laws. but it was still, you know, it was, in and of itself, it was a really good game. You had, who was it? You had Sean May on North Carolina. It was that was the Ray Felton team, I believe. And then they had that shooting guard that flamed out in the NBA. Everybody thought he was going to be really, really good, but he was not. They, you know, Carolina winds up beating Illinois, and I went to Jen's parents' house that evening, actually, that night, just to hang out for a little bit, and I wore a North Carolina shirt in, and just to rub it in just a little bit to tweak them. This is going to shock you guys, but I enjoy tweaking people. That was the game was really well played on Illinois side. Oh, that I'm thinking of a different game, but that Illinois side, I think they had D. Brown or something, buddy. Some future NBA player there. Where did Deron Williams go to school? Was it there?
Illinois.
Yeah, yeah, that was the Deron Williams team. So it was a really good, it was a great game between teams. Both sides had pros. That was a really fun one. I also, the other game that comes to mind is Carmelo's national championship game.
Oh, that's a good one.
He was insane. Yeah.
For as much crap as Carmelo gets as an NBA player and all that, his freshman season, man, and that title season, he was one of the most unbelievable college seasons ever. And I'm like you, I'm not a huge huge college guy, right? But like, I remember watching him. I was like, "Ooh, that kid is he's fun," right? Yeah. And yeah,
yeah, that was a good one. Any game Duke loses is my favorite college basketball game of all time.
There you go.
Next question here comes from KCP's Anklet. What's up, Anthony and Pete? I've been holding out on hating on Rondo for the better part of his tenure on as a Laker. I thought he was a good veteran piece when he was first signed. However, I finally had enough. Passes he used to be able to make in tight spaces that no one else could make are no longer even a thing, though tonight's not the night to make that point. He had that one pass to Kuz.
And that was great. And then he threw like four other passes. Like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Even wide open passes to the open man cutting are blatantly missed too. I can't count how many times Kuz cuts wide open to the hoop and the ball never arrives. Don't you guys find it odd for a player with Rondo's court vision and basketball IQ to suddenly be unable to make even the most basic passes? I feel like good passing is the one skill that is almost always timeless. Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about this.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point because this is something I've wondered about too. It's like, do you lose passing skill? Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
I think this dude is so comfortable that he's like totally fine. Like, I don't think he's focused. That's what I think it comes down to.
Yeah.
I think that in a lot of circumstances, like when he's bad against better teams, like, so like that Clippers game, he was awful in the first half. He was really good in the third quarter. And then he was bad again the few minutes he played in the fourth quarter. Like, that's just him being overmatched at this point of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he was making some nice passes and all that, but he was focused. The difference between Rondo in a game like the Clippers versus a game like this Nets game is night and day in that respect. He still wasn't good overall against Clippers, despite that really, really good third quarter. But when he's just not really paying attention, there's just all sorts of like, where is that pass going? That's my working theory. It might not be correct. And maybe you do lose passing ability. I'm with that listener in that it doesn't make sense to me that would be something that would go.
Kind of wonder if he's like basketball senile.
Jesus, Anthony, you're going to dark places with this.
Well,
dude,
like, here's my thing. Eventually, like, when you get older, it feels like the world around you starts going faster, right?
Very much.
And I feel like that's kind of what's going on here with Rondo, where everything around him is going so much faster, and he's still used to, because when he was in his prime, the game moved super slow. He always looked like he was in control. He almost looked like he was going, you know, purposely slow, because that's how the game would go even slower for him, and it'd be easier for him to pick defenses apart that way. But I think now, at this stage of his athleticism and his instincts and his reflexes, like, I just think the NBA is too fast for him. I think that's where we're at.
I think you're actually on the right track there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you combine it, because I agree with you completely with what you said about him just being comfortable. Like, why should he care? He's played the worst basketball. Like, the stretches of his bad stretches have been worse than any other player, not just getting rotation minutes in the NBA, but any NBA player this year. Like, his bad stretches have been that bad, and he just keeps on getting his role. So like at that point, the carrot, he's chewing on the carrot that Frank Vogel should be giving him, but it just doesn't matter. He's going to get another carrot.
I'm happy for you, Anthony. You got to get this one off. You wanted to get it off after two freaking wins against the Clippers and Bucks, but that was not the time. I'm just happy for you. You got that off your chest.
You know, it was building. I didn't think I had that kind of energy for me tonight, but Rondo takes me there. Congrats, Rondo. We'll go one more question here. By Magic writes, curious to hear from both your perspectives. If you're starting a franchise, which player would you want to start it with, Luka or Zion? Maybe it's a no-brainer, but if I had to pick, Zion would probably be my pick, but it's very close.
Yeah, that's a great question. I will go Zion too. I'm actually working on a Zion piece for The Athletic that'll be out in a couple days. Because Zion has more room to grow than Luka. And the reason I say that is Luka's phenomenal, man. Luka is the most skilled 20-year-old I've ever seen, or 21-year-old I've ever seen, which is not to say he's necessarily the best, right? It's no slight to LeBron or anything like that. But his moves are so advanced, like his operation off of the pick and roll, all of the things that it takes time to learn. And it's like, these are all the things that, this is exactly why 28-year-olds are better than 20-year-olds type mm-hmm. stuff, is they learn this stuff over the course of the next 8 years. He knows most of those things. So maybe, I mean, maybe there are, and there are always great players, of which Doncic is going to be a Hall of Famer, health willing. Great players always push the game forward. So there's always going to be something that, like, I don't, that we all don't think that, like, oh, this is how it is now, but it's not how it's going to be in 10 years.
Yeah.
Guys like LeBron, guys like Magic, guys like Jordan, Kobe, these guys push the game forward. And that was, I mean, that was in Kobe's last tweet, man. It was like, that was what he said to LeBron when LeBron passed him, was keep pushing the game forward.
Right.
And so maybe there is more room to grow for Luka than I give credit for. Zion doesn't even know what he's doing yet. that's the premise of the piece. That, like, this dude's averaging like 23, 24 points a game and just has a vague understanding of 5-on-5 NBA basketball. So that is going to improve, right? Like, he's got, or at least
in NBA nutrition and conditioning.
Yeah, right. All that stuff. So I don't know where Luka goes from here, and where Zion has a ton of area to go through. Right now, Luka is a significantly better player, especially in higher level settings, because I think Zion can be taken away from what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. If you force Zion to be skilled, which is much easier said than done, you can limit him. Whereas that's what Luka does, right? But with that type of athleticism and strength and speed and just that, just everything about all that, I take Zion just because the ceiling's so much higher.
Man, that's tough. I go Luka.
I could see it. I could see it.
I go Luka. Give me the wing who can get himself the ball.
Shot, you know, creator. You give him the ball out, yeah, on 30 feet away from the hoop.
Right.
Get it.
He can bring up the ball for himself. He doesn't require somebody getting him the ball. Now, maybe Zion eventually gets to a place where he just rebounds and goes, boards and goes all the time. And I think then he'll be even more dominant. And I think both these guys, like, again, I'm kind of splitting hairs here between these two. But I also think, like, I don't think Luka's ever going to be a good defender. But can he be mm-hmm. league average? Can he be slightly below league average? Like, one thing that I really enjoyed watching was Luke Walton's approach to defense, which was basically like, I know I am way too slow to get faked out, so I'm just going to stand here and hope you wind up running into me anyway. Uh-huh. You know? And because I can relate. And I kind of feel like if Luka just kind of learns where to be, and he's a smart enough player to where he can learn where to be on defense, I think that will improve his value to his team. So I think that's one spot that he can improve. And then the other thing, too, is, like, as Dallas figures out better, like, which kinds of players and acquires the kinds of players that enhance Luka, that's also going to kind of unlock things. Because I think he's only going to get better by the kinds of teammates that he's passing the ball to, right? He's going to be mm-hmm. more productive by that. So it's close. I don't think there's a scenario here where you look back on the answers that you and I give and either of us sound like idiots, health notwithstanding, you know? But, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'd rather have the guy that I don't have to figure out a way, because, like, one thing that I've really noticed this year in the NBA is, holy crap, guys are really bad at post-entry passes. They are awful at it. This is the worst the league has ever been at it, because it's not a skill that you really have to worry about. It's not something that people really work on. So give me the guy that I don't have to rely on others getting him the ball. And just in general, I think small forwards are the most important player on NBA teams. So give me that guy.
Yep. You can't go wrong with either. The future of the NBA is in great hands.
I also, like, for Zion as a defender, I think it was really easy. Like, this is a thing that people kind of, I don't think take into account when they talk about, like, who's the next Draymond. But, like, on the defense, right? Draymond became the defender he became because he was drafted lower than he thought he should have been, and he worked his absolute ass off every single play to get there. And I think when you're drafted number one overall, it takes a lot for you to commit to defense that way, in the way that Draymond does. So when people say, like, well, sure, Zion could just play defense like Draymond. I don't see it, because that's a level of commitment that somebody who is going to be asked to do that much on offense doesn't normally do on defense. So unless he just says, like, that's how he's going to impact games, he's going to be more focused on defense and rim running and rolling to the basket, then yeah, I see the path there. But defensively, I don't really know who Zion becomes to make such a noticeable gap between the two players.
It's a very fair point. I would just say that he has the physical tools to do it if he decides to, whereas Luka is less
equipped. Never going to have those tools. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. Good, great questions.
I made you put down your wine right there. I timed that perfectly.
Take my sips like as you're talking.
I tried to kick it to you like right at the right point. I got it.
You know what? I'm going to take a sip right now. Ooh. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast, though. This was a trap podcast, I think, for Pete and I.
It was a trap podcast. We scale on this one. We did.
Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.